Mike Holler here, and I'm talking to Mark Voigt in Berlin. He's the CEO of Immutep, which is a cancer drug developer, a biotech. It's currently capitalized at $450 million on the ASX, and it's had a pretty good run in the last 12 months. It's gone from 15 cents to 65 cents in 12 months. It's been coming up with some good announcements, solid announcements on trial results. It's got a unique therapy, which I won't attempt to describe in this intro, and I'll leave it to Mark Voigt to do so. And as always, we talk about cash. They've got a lot of cash in the bank, but that'll get spent pretty quickly. So obviously, the market is anticipating a sale of this business, or at least a big licensing agreement with some international big pharma company. But it does look a very promising therapy for cancer that Immutep is developing. So here's Mark Voigt, CEO of Immutep, based in Berlin. So Mark, I know you've got no problem with cash, but tell us what your cash burn is and how much you've got in the bank.
Yeah, first of all, we reported end of last quarter that we have a bit more than 50 million Australian dollars cash on bank, and our so-called cash life is into 2023 calendar year. The precise cash burn per quarter is a bit hard to estimate, as it's dependent on the different clinical trials. But we have a relatively high amount of cash, a lot going on, of course, but also a good cash life.
And you, it looks like, certainly in the March quarter, it was $1 million a month, right?
Right. Of course, sometimes it's higher when you, for instance, start a new clinical trial, which we will do in the next period and the next very few months. A new trial was 154 patients. So when you recruit then patients into clinical trials, it gets rapidly, relatively costly.
Before we get into the protein that you're investigating, tell us a bit about the history of the business, because it was begun, it was started, the company was founded by the chief medical officer, Dr. Frederick Treibel.
Treibel.
Okay, yes. Very good. And he actually discovered this protein in 1990, correct?
Absolutely right. So Frederick is the worldwide leading scientist for LAG-3. He's immunologist and oncologist, devoted more than 30 years of his career to LAG-3. So he discovered it. And I think it's a very, very relevant discovery, as we now know. If there would have been a product earlier on the market, let's say earlier than 2018, it's not unlikely that we would have been part of the Nobel Prize winners for medicine in 2018, where his colleagues discovering PD-1 and CTLA-4, the other two validated checkpoints, have been awarded with the Nobel Prize. But the roots of the company are twofold. On the one hand side, Australian roots. So the company has been publicly listed, acted as a biotech company with different concepts since 2001. And then we have been acquiring Frederick's company, founded as a private French company. That transaction closed by end of 2014. And since then, we have been moving forward, fully concentrating on LAG-3 in different clinical trials with different programs.
So perhaps you can just help me here. I'm looking at the 20-year chart, the chart of the share price of Immutep since 2001, which is that when the company was listed originally?
Yeah, it was even listed beforehand, I would say. Not untypical Australian story. So the company originally was incorporated back in 1987, if I'm not mistaken, has then been listed as Prima Resources, so had the diamond mines, divested that, was then a shell, has been filled then with intellectual property from the Burnett Institute, different concepts. Unfortunately, they didn't really work out. So as often in biotech, the company reinvented itself two, three times practically.
Yeah, right. And because I can look at in 2002, the share price was nearly $6. And then 2011, it was $3.50. So it's sort of had these big surges up in price and then back down again, presumably when whatever it was that was working on didn't work out.
Absolutely right. Very different times also for biotech. At that time, more speculative. It was a big wave in the early 2000s, then becoming more problematic around 2006, 7, 8, then a restarter. But practically, I believe it would be fair to focus on the period since mid of 2014 and then end of 14 when we acquired Leg3. Of course, it's a continued legal basis, if you like, but from a content point of view, that was a fresh start for the company.
Right. And so now it focuses entirely on Leg3. So perhaps we can just get to the nitty gritty. Leg3 is described as a checkpoint. What is a checkpoint?
A checkpoint you can think of like a little trigger in your immune system, which could up or downregulate your immune system. Obviously, something which is of interest in cancer or autoimmune diseases, where you would like to modulate your immune system to either actively fight cancer better or to bring it under control, because autoimmune diseases, obviously, you have an issue with your own immune system.
Right. Okay. So what exactly did Dr. Triebel discover?
Yeah, he discovered a specific immune checkpoint called Leg3, lymphocyte activation gene 3, located on the T cell. So you can think of T cells like the soldiers of the immune system attacking cancerous cells, for instance. And Leg3 is binding to MHC class 2. There is a binding partner. There always needs to be a signaling and interaction between two molecules. So it's a Leg3 binding to MHC class 2 on the so-called antigen-presenting cells, for instance, dendritic cells. You can think of them as the generals of the immune system creating more soldiers or help to create more soldiers and also providing those soldiers with the right information whom to attack. And he discovered one specific checkpoint, this Leg3, which is relevant in cancer. It's a validated interaction. And there are other checkpoints like PD-1 and CTLA-4, multi-billion dollar blockbuster drugs are based upon those, and a number of others where unfortunately there's a question mark or sometimes a disappointment, or hopefully also some others which will be validated in the future. But it took for the first one, CTLA-4, 2011, then PD-1, 2014-15. So it took 6-7 years to have the next immune checkpoint validated. That may also show the relevance.
Right, and you're saying that these other two checkpoints received the Nobel Prize in 2018. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
And so this one that Dr. Triebel found is a third of the same kind of group of group of therapies.
100% right.
Okay, so obviously this is, you know, I'm way out of my depth with this stuff, but I need you to explain it fairly simply. I suppose we should focus next on the most recent data that you've published, which was a week ago. Phase two study of which was called EFTI. Can you take us through that?
Yeah, of course. So first of all, if you allow a little bit on eftilagimod or EFT, that is one of our four programs. It's an antigen presenting cell activator, if you like. An immune booster, so it broadly pushes your immune system, activates the immune system. And we have different clinical trials ongoing with eftilagimod, for instance, in metastatic breast cancer, non-small cell lung cancer, and head and neck cancer. And we presented data at ESCO, American Society of Clinical Oncology, so at the worldwide biggest and most relevant clinical oncology conference. So we presented data from non-small cell lung cancer, so-called first line, so whenever a patient gets for the first time treatment, and for head and neck cancer, second line, so after a first round of therapies. And the data is out of the so-called TACTI-002 clinical trial. I won't make it too complicated, but it's a trial we run in collaboration with US Merck, and it's a therapy of FT together with Keytruda, a marketed approved drug. And by and large, what you can say is that we doubled what you would typically expect from Keytruda, which is an improved standard of care in terms of patients responding. So tumor shrinkage, We saw a very good median overall survival in second line head and neck cancer with more than 12 months, compared to 6 to 9 months, which you would typically expect with best standard of care.
So the survival was 75%, was it not? Is that right?
The median survival is 12.6 months, and the number of patients continue to survive. The median is obviously the middle number, if you like, the average patient.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get a sense of, well, okay, maybe the point of lag three is to keep people alive for longer. Is that the idea?
Yes, I think that's the main and basic idea practically of all cancer treatments. The most important point is to prolong life of patients, and in some cases, you can even come to a so-called complete remission, so where you get rid of cancer. We actually achieved that with 2 patients in non-small cell lung cancer and 5 patients in head and neck cancer. So to come from cure is a big word, of course, up to prolongation of your life expectancy. And of course, you need to take safety into account and tolerability. So in best case, with good quality of life, because it doesn't help you if you get, let's say, a very toxic chemotherapy, your quality of life is miserable and you live 3 months longer. Very often patients would refuse then to take that medication. And obviously not the case here.
So does your therapy have to be taken with chemotherapy?
No, it does not. We can combine it with chemotherapy, but you do not need to have it. So in the TACTI-002 trial, it's 2 immuno-oncology therapies. So Keytruda, checkpoint therapy, plus eftilagimod, also in immune therapy here in APC activator. We have another trial where we test it and give it together with chemotherapy.
So how many trials have you got going?
Oh, that's a good question. So I need to start counting almost. We have 1 trial in metastatic breast cancer. Then we have the TACTI-002 clinical trial with different indications. We are about to start TACTI-003, a registration-relevant trial in first-line head and neck cancer. We have INSIGHT-004 and soon INSIGHT-005. So let's say overall 4 or 5 active clinical trials.
Are they all in phase 2 or are you in phase 3 with anything?
They are in phase 2, but the trial which we are about to start in first-line head and neck cancer is registration relevant. So we received in April this year the so-called fast-track designation from the US FDA, meaning that we can file for accelerated approval if the data is good enough based on the phase 2. Which we are conducting and starting. It has 154 patients, that clinical trial.
So just perhaps a step back here. What's the patent situation with LAG-3? Does Immutep own global rights to LAG-3, or are other pharmaceutical companies also developing and doing trials of their own on this?
Yeah, so there are different levels of patent protection. And first of all, I believe it's an accurate statement to say that Immutep has the best intellectual property and know-how basis around LAG-3. The checkpoint as such is IP-free, so it's LAG-3, and you can develop programs blocking LAG-3. This is happening. If you look at the LAG-3 therapeutic landscape, first of all, the area of autoimmune diseases, there are just 2 programs. Both of them have been invented by us. One is exclusively worldwide out-licensed to GlaxoSmithKline, a major pharma company. Another one we move forward ourselves. And then eftilagimod is unique. You will not find any other program globally which is an MHC class 2 agonist. That's in our so-called mode of action, so the way the product works. The blocking antibodies, and this is, for instance, what Bristol-Myers Squibb does and has just been validating at ESCO, so the validation of LAG-3 is fresh, happened in the past few weeks. There are a number of big pharma companies, for most big pharma companies, dealing with blocking LAG-3 in order to keep the T-cell active. We have an own approach there, which we have exclusively worldwide out-licensed to Novartis. So overall, we have the strongest footprint in Leg 3. There is no other company globally which has four different programs around Leg 3. And we have the worldwide leading scientist on board. That gives us a very strong position beyond the patent protections we are having in place, of course, for all our different programs.
So is it fair to say that Bristol-Myers Squibb is ahead of you?
In this one category, indeed, yes, they are. They have been presenting data from a phase 3 clinical trial, which is in first-line melanoma, more than 700 patients. And the median progression-free survival, so let's say the time until the tumor grows again, was doubled using Leg 3 therapy together with a PD-1 therapy versus PD-1 alone to more than 10 months and highly statistically significant. So no overlap of the so-called confidence intervals. So in that category, Bristol-Myers Squibb is worldwide leading, that's for sure. And that's for us very good and very important. It's one thing if biotech talks about a checkpoint and is showing data, and it's an entirely different thing if the big pharmaceutical industry says Leg 3 is very important and it's validated. So we have been in the spotlight and also mentioned in special interest media, but the big phase 3 is clearly Bristol-Myers Squibb, and in the category of antagonistic antibodies, BMS is clearly leading. Our licensee Novartis is also active in five different clinical trials, well above 1,000 patients. There are others like Merck, Boehringer Ingelheim, and so on and so forth.
Right. So to sum it up, you're in partnership with Novartis on part of what you're doing, but also with Merck, but you're not licensing it with Bristol-Myers Squibb.
Indeed, right. Yes, absolutely. So we have, and this is addressing a key principle of our business, to team up with your customer. At the end of the day, the customer for the products we are developing and many, many other biotech companies is very often the big pharmaceutical industry. And we firmly believe that you have to know your customer, that you should team up with them, that you need to come to good business arrangements. And this is what we did. So we exclusively worldwide out-licensed two of our four programs, one to GlaxoSmithKline, the other one to Novartis. And then for eftilagimod, we have different clinical trial collaborations with US Merck, with German Merck, with GSK, with Pfizer. We also benefit from the diagnostic space with LabCorp. I think that's quite important to pass multiple due diligences to discuss with these guys and global pharmaceutical companies.
Are these also the not only your customers, but also the potential buyers of Immutep?
Could be. If someone would step up, makes an offer to acquire the company, happens in the business, let's say, on a regular basis, so it's not uncommon, this could happen. Yes, indeed.
Well, in fact, it's unlikely, isn't it, that Immutep takes this all the way through? So at some point, one of the big pharmaceutical companies needs to acquire the business in order to take the thing to market. Is that correct, or is that or is
could
there
be?
So is there an independent future for Immutep at all?
Could be. First of all, we come here with mental strength, and we develop our programs to move them forward to the market. Not to move them forward in a way that is just sufficient for the big pharmaceutical industry, but we take drug development seriously. And this is why we move forward in manufacturing, regulatory affairs, clinical development. And I believe this would, at the end of the day, also provide us with the best economic outcome, because from a net present value perspective, the closer you work towards the market and the closer you come to the market and to registration of the program, the higher the intrinsic value of the program is. So there could be a future for Immutep. This needs to be, first of all, the mentality. The reality is, if you continue to deliver, if you move your program towards the market, in most of the cases, there will be an offer.
Yes. And hopefully at auction, in fact.
Yeah, could be. Could be. Who knows? I mean, this is maybe one of the reasons why it's also good to engage with multiple parties and not be just dependent on one. That's a little bit more difficult.
Yes. Can we just go back to the other two checkpoints that you mentioned that resulted in the Nobel Prize in 2018?
Sure.
What happened to them? Where are they now in development? And who owns them?
So they are both approved, or there are in for both checkpoints, there are approved products based upon them, actually multi-billion dollar blockbuster drugs, like, for instance, Keytruda from Merck or Opdivo from Bristol Myers Squibb, jointly making well above $20 billion annual sales. For PD-1, there are actually more than 56 or 57 different programs. If you like to look at that negatively, you would say me too approaches. But the reality is it's a multi-billion dollar market, and these immune checkpoint-based therapies have been leading to a paradigm shift in the way cancer is treated in more than 40% of cancer indications. So it has been changing the day-to-day medical care for cancer patients to the better for a number of patients.
So these, just to be clear, these other checkpoints are in the market now, and they're selling. The owners of them are selling the drugs.
And indeed.
Is it possible to identify what the value of those individual drugs is, or are they they're buried in very large pharma companies?
No, you can, if they are publicly listed, those companies, you can, of course, look what the annual sales are. And there are companies like Bristol Myers Squibb with a market cap, and they are for most a cancer company. They have also anti-LAG-3, anti-PD-1. Their market cap is $144 billion. If you look at Merck, they are very strong with Keytruda. Keytruda is their main product, their main revenue driver. And their market cap is $184 billion. So these checkpoints are, from a commercial point of view, from a treatment point of view, highly relevant. So it's one of the most relevant fields in the whole biotech industry.
And so LAG-3, your particular checkpoint will come into that market as being another of these particular therapies, correct?
Absolutely right. Of course, you have to deliver data and you need to develop the drug, but you are absolutely right. And BMS will be very likely the first one to register the program. This is what they practically, if you decipher what they have been saying in the past days, this is their plan. And of course, others are pushing forward, and we are pushing forward ourselves as well.
So is it fair? I'm just to get a sense of it, is it fair to say that BMS is a competitor of yours, or you said before you're happy that they're in phase three and they're going to validation now, but that their particular therapy doesn't knock yours out in some way?
It does not knock ours out, because we have a unique mode of action. We are not, I don't want to be too specific, but we are not anti-LAG-3. So there is the interaction between LAG-3 and MHC class 2. The BMS program, like from our partner Novartis, it's exactly the similar mode of action, address LAG-3 on the T cell. We use LAG-3 as a tool to activate the other side of the interaction, MHC class 2. So we have an MHC class 2 agonist, and it's a truly unique program. It's not a me-too approach. No one else is doing that. And we work also on different primary target cells. So it's not a competition for us. It's a blessing. And of course, Novartis has enough firepower for the competition with BMS, as well as Merck or others. But it's a blessing that, of course, LAG-3 is in the spotlight, gets the attention, and that we have the situation that not only our CSO discovered it, but that we have the strongest footprint. This is why we are very happy about it, and it would almost be cynical not to be happy about good medical progress for the benefit of patients. So I think everyone should be happy about good progress in terms of cancer drugs.
Yes, in fact, it seems that there are 13 other antagonist programs underway, correct?
Yes, that sounds about right, and I'm sure there will be now more, but it's typically a big boys game also. So you see many big pharmaceutical companies engaging in that race.
And your one is just called agonist, which means that you're not blocking the T cell, you're doing something else.
Oh, very good. Yes, indeed. 100% right. We are activating the antigen-presenting cell. We have, if you like, an immune booster, which is creating via the physiological way more CD8 T cells, more NK cells, more CD4 activated dendritic cells. So it's a very, very different kind of program, but still working with the same interaction, LAG-3, MHC class 2. And this is why we do not need to fear that. Otherwise, if we would, let's say, not have been out-licensing anti-LAG-3 to Novartis, I believe for a biotech company, it's pretty hard to compete with Big Pharma in terms of resources, number of trials. Look at Bristol-Myers Squibb. They run 41 clinical trials, thousands of patients. That costs easily $10 billion or more.
So do you say that your therapy using LAG-3 is more effective than the anti-agonist ones?
No, I wouldn't say that. It's different, and it's dependent on the different settings. First of all, the antagonistic antibodies, PD-1, LAG-3, TIGIT, CTLA-4, you name them, are dependent on the T cell being there. If there is nothing to block, if there is not a target, you give the drug, wouldn't work because the target cells are not there. We are creating those target cells. We can measure that in patients. We have been publishing some data in December, for instance, that we increase the number of cytotoxic CD8 T cells in patients. So it shows you nicely that there might be synergistic effects between, let's say, anti-PD-1 and eftilagimod, and this is what we presented also at ESCO. So this is part of the explanation for the nice data sets.
Right.
But I wouldn't say it's more powerful here or there. This you would need to identify with the data. With our data, we have been showing in non-small cell lung cancer, head and neck cancer. I believe it's a fair statement that we do not need to fear competition. You always should have a lot of respect, but currently, as the data tracks, we can be very confident. And of course, FT has to deliver also in the future and needs to confirm the results we have been presenting.
And have you finished phase two yet or not?
We will present final overall survival data in our double-blind randomized metastatic breast cancer clinical trial in second half of this year. A very tough setting where also some of the best drugs have been difficulties to achieve something. We saw very nice interim results in December presented at the San Antonio Breast Cancer Conference. Then we will have towards end of this year a data update, I assume, from TACTI-002. First data from the registration-relevant first-line head and neck trial could be expected maybe first half of next year. So we are in, if you like, we are partly in the harvesting period, partly we come to end of clinical trials, partly we start some new ones, which is a very healthy mix for a biotech company.
And when you say that you've got enough cash, your cash life is till 2023, I think you said. Does that mean you've got enough to go through phase three entirely, phase three trials or not?
No. Clearly, the development towards the market is a costly undertaking for every biotech company. Our current cash position is covering the programs which I have been mentioning. Into 2023. If you would run a phase three clinical trial, do more work here or there, let's say in manufacturing, this would not be covered by the existing funds.
So is your intention to raise new funds to do that or to bring in a partner?
That's a good question. As a biotech company, you have to be flexible. You need to assess upcoming opportunities, need to do the right thing. Especially in a value creation mode, the main aim and the main driver should be the content. So follow data signals, identify the next steps, see what is reasonable, balance that with other options, and then make a decision to either move forward or not.
Yeah, right. Well, I think we've got to the end of our interview. Thank you very much, Mark.
Alan, it was a pleasure and an honor. Thank you so much.
That was Mark Voigt, the CEO of Immutep.